Welcome to Ask an Innovator, where we interview senior executives about innovation. You can find us at askaninnovator.com or subscribe with your favorite podcast app. I'm your host, Josh Barker, CEO of City Innovation Labs. Welcome to Ask an Innovator. Today, I've got Max Juster. He is the high-end brand director of the Great Lakes region of Anheuser-Busch, right?
Yes, that's me. Thanks awesome. For inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, welcome. And tell us a little bit about your past. I mean, you've got some innovation in your blood, right?
So yeah, I've been with Anheuser-Busch now for 7 years. I started right out of college. So I came through a management program and then started on the sales side as an analyst. And then my first role over on the marketing side was in digital marketing. And I was actually leading more process innovation for digital marketing. So trying to make our content a little bit more localized. So it was kind of a new thing for Anheuser-Busch. And then from there, moved over to our Mexican import team and actually led the rollout of Montejo and Estrella Jalisco in the United States. And then from there, had the opportunity to move back to Chicago, which is where I'm from. So born and raised here. So happy to get back and led the sales innovation strategy for us. And so the idea there is trying to make sure when we're launching new brands like extensions to the Ritas or the Seltzers, that we're taking those to market in the right way, because it's a lot different than some of our mega brands like Bud and Bud Light. And now I lead our high-end brands. So I have our imports like Stella Artois and Hoegaarden, and then our craft portfolio, which is something I think a lot of people don't know about Anheuser-Busch, is just the extensive craft portfolio that we have. So in Chicago, we're known for Goose Island. We also have Elysian and 10 Barrel in the upper Midwest, Northwest, and then Golden Road in LA, Carbach in Texas, Blue Point in Patch Hog, New York, Wicked Weed's an interesting one too. It's a sours in North Carolina, and we actually launched our own brewery, Vesa Sur, in Miami. So we have kind of breweries all over the country, which is a neat piece of Anheuser-Busch that a lot of people often forget. We're usually known as the largest brewer, but I think people forget that we're also the largest craft brewer.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even know that. That's cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So, we always start the interview out, what is innovation to you?
So to me, innovation is all about adding value to the consumer, and it's always new value, right? Mm. To me, the big thing that I like to talk about is it doesn't have to be that moonshot idea. Like we were talking, it doesn't have to be the next iPhone. It can be something small and minor, even the smallest tweak to packaging can make a world of difference to the consumer. And if you're able to drive value for your consumers, you're going to be able to drive value for your company as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because too many people think that they have to hire a Steve Jobs or have this awesome product launch splash. And it's too often we forget to look at what we currently have, right? And say, well, how can we make incrementally these things better? And sometimes just the small changes not only make an incremental difference, they make a big difference, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can give you like a specific example of that. So when I was on the Mexican imports on Estrella, we were looking at our can and we were trying to figure out, how can we make our can nicer? And a little bit of background on that is what we did is we did a competitive analysis, looked at Modelo. Modelo's got this gorgeous bottle and it tests significantly better than the Estrella bottle. It's just more appealing because of that gold wrap. But then we realized the majority of Mexican imports are actually sold in cans. Why don't we try to improve our can? And we figured there's actually a little bit more functional benefit to the consumer if you look at the can and potentially adding a seal to the can, because a lot of those stores are in convenience, maybe a little gross, a little messy.
Yeah. Did you interview users to figure that out, or did you? How did
we did? Yes, we did focus groups on that and tried to understand. You know, what are you drinking? Why?
Interesting.
And with the Mexican imports, it was, well, I drink Modelo because of the bottle. Well, do you drink the bottle? No. I drink it out of the can, but I like that the bottle looks nice. And then it's like, well, would you like if the can looked nice? And everyone's like, yeah, I'd love if the can looked nicer. But how do you make a can look nice?
Now, is that? Would you say that would be? Sometimes it's like subconscious decisions we make, right? It's not a conscious decision. Do you think that's more of a conscious or subconscious, like the bottle looks better, I'm going to select that? Or were you able to derive that out?
It feels like it's becoming more subconscious because they're going to the store and they're picking up cans.
Yeah.
But then when you really drive into them, like, okay, well, why are you picking up the cans? And you say, well, because it's a nicer beer. Well, why is it a nicer beer?
And interesting.
Well, the packaging's beautiful. It's like, well, the cans don't look any different.
Right.
No, but the bottle packaging is beautiful. I was like, well, do you drink the bottles? No, I drink the cans.
And interesting.
So it's like, okay, here we go.
And then you took the cans. That's where you focused on this particular instance, right?
And that's exactly right. For us, we thought, all right, well, if 70% of the consumption's in the cans, we should probably innovate on the cans and make our difference there. And that way we're not just being a follower, we can actually be a leader and bring something again with the value to the consumer. And the thought with the cans is, if you go into some of these convenience stores in parts of the city, it might be a little bit dirty, a little bit dusty. The last thing you really want to do is take that can and put it right to your lips.
Right.
Having that little seal to peel off makes it a little bit nicer, a little bit more enjoyable.
Sure. And it probably adds a perception, right? Because it's gold, right?
Exactly.
It's a top's gold.
There's like a gold on the top with red around. So it looks really nice. The graphics team did an amazing job on it.
So it
does look pretty nice.
Very interesting. And so what was the result of just adding this foil on the top?
So this was the greatest part, is when we tested the foil on the top, the lift was significant to the point where Estrella, which is even a much lesser known brand than Modelo, when put side by side with that packaging, we're actually considered more premium than Modelo when you compare our cans to their cans.
Wow. So interesting.
Huge win for the company. And again, just a small little tweak for us.
Small tweak. Interesting. And how did that all start? You know, how did you, from inception, go, we need to do something about this can? And how did you know you needed to do something to where you did something?
It came all the way back to when we were first launching the brand and talking with consumers and trying to understand, what's making you drink Mexican imports over any other part of the beer category? And it all came down to quality, as Mexican imports have a perceived value over any other beer as being a little bit more high quality.
Interesting.
And then so it's, okay, well, why is that? Talk to me a little bit more about that. Part of that's the being imported. Part of that's it speaks to the multicultural consumer who might be from Mexico or from Latin America, who wants something that's from a little bit closer to home. And then that last part was that quality piece of it just looks nicer on the shelf. And that's where we said, okay, well, we have a Mexican import, so we're striking the box on that, right?
It's right.
We're hitting what the multicultural wants, a beer from Mexico. We don't have packaging that says nice as our competitors.
Right.
What do we do?
Yeah.
And then it's, do you just want to match him, or do you want to try to do something different and stand out and, again, add a little bit more value to the consumer?
Right. That makes sense. Now, what are you doing with, I mean, this concept of incrementally improving, right? And even perceptionally improving different products in your current portfolio. How have you guys seen that in other areas?
So another great example is with Goose Island. And to me, this one is great because a lot of people probably wouldn't even consider it an innovation. But for me, it was the biggest innovation we've had and our most successful innovation is the majority of Goose Island is sold in bottles, 6-packs and 12-packs. And we added cans to our portfolio. And what we did is we launched the cans in a 15-pack. And the reason we did that is we were able to add 3 more cans and provided that the same value to consumers as the 12-pack bottle. There's some savings on our side to make that possible. And so now our consumer is getting 3 extra beers for the cost of the 12-pack. So consumers are very excited. So we did this for several of our brands, the biggest two being IPA and 312. And those two packages in Chicago are the leading share gainers for all of craft. So you're taking an established brand like Goose Island, and people, if you ask them, like, what's the fastest growing craft package, they'll probably give you some brand new beer, maybe something from Rev. And that's not the case. It's actually the legacy brands of Goose IPA and Goose 312, the 15 packs, just because it's that added value to the consumer. Because being able to give them 3 extra beers for the same price as a 12 pack is something they really, really wanted. And then consumers also really wanted the opportunity to drink in the what we call can occasion, where the bottle occasion won't work. And examples of that would be if you're drinking next to a pool where glass isn't allowed, Goose wasn't able to participate. Now Goose can participate. Same thing kind of goes with the beach. And even if you're just thinking about filling up a cooler, cans weigh a lot less than bottles. You can get a lot more beer in your cooler if you're using cans and bottles, and it makes it a little bit easier for you to carry it around. So there's a lot of reasons why consumers prefer the can to the bottle. And then for us, there was a lot of reasons why we thought it made sense to give consumers a couple extra beers at that same price to drive value. And because of that, we were able to drive share gains.
Interesting. I mean, it's fascinating to me all the things you're saying about really about context, like understanding the context in which the beer is drank, right? I mean, by the pool or at the beach, or it's really interesting. You guys, you know, dig into, well, how are they using it today and how do they want to use it? Interesting. Very interesting.
And that's exactly it. Is you trying to get into your consumer's head as much as you can and trying to really live like the consumer of, okay, what am I drinking beer for? Why am I drinking beer? Is it delivering what I want it to be delivered? Can we deliver that value better? Or are there other opportunities where people might be willing to drink beer but can't at the moment?
Right, right. And then on top of that, another point that I was thinking about as you were talking is one of your challenges must be is as I'm walking into a grocery store or a liquor store, you're stacked up against tons of different brands, like all these different. So how do you differentiate? And really, I mean, one of it was the gold foil, but I mean, 15 pack sounds like that's another way you differentiate. And it's that's pretty interesting. If I'm in an aisle, I see 10 different, 20 different types of beer, and I'm staring at it going, man, which one am I going to choose? And so those were some of the differentiators you guys picked up on, huh? Like the number of beer and then the appearance of it. Is that right?
And the appearance, I would even go a step further, is one of the things we did, and this was led by a different team who's more specialized in this, was a packaging refresh on Goose Island. And it's exactly what you hit on is 20 years ago, Goose was the craft of Chicago. Now there's 150 breweries just in Chicago alone.
Right.
And so how do you stand out on shelf? And so the team worked on that and tried to figure out what can we do to make our graphics really pop on shelf and also give back to the brand as what does Goose Island stand for? And for us, it's an urban brewery from Chicago, and we needed that urbanness to come through on the packaging. And so that was one of the things we did with those refreshes. And I think it looks a lot better now. So if you go into a grocery store now and see the new packaging, I think it looks great and it really pops and stands out. So that is, I think, something people often forget is don't just look at your packaging on a PowerPoint slide, look at it against all of your other brands as well and your competition to see, does it stand out when it's next to competition or does it just look good isolated by itself?
Right. Yeah. Cause we always compare it when, you know, it's easy to just have it on when you're developing probably design, just have it alone. Be like, oh, this looks great. But to compare it to be like, wow, when it's compared against these five other brands, it kind of gets lost.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're like, oh, like white pops. Okay. Well, white might pop, but if your other five competitors are also all white, like in the seltzer category,
right,
might not be the best decision.
Right. Interesting. So where do you see Anheuser-Busch? You know, you guys are talking about these incremental changes along the way. Where do you see that innovation for Anheuser-Busch heading? You know, where does the trajectory look like?
So I think there's two pieces for Anheuser-Busch with that. It's the incremental changes that I've been lucky enough to be involved with. And then they also do have some of those moonshot ideas. And so the moonshot ideas we really have led by our craft team, where we try to, again, it starts with the consumers. What's the consumer drinking now? What does the consumer want to drink? Is there a gap there? If there is, let's fill in that gap. And those are kind of some more of those moonshots. And what we're trying to do with those is pilot them fast. So learn quickly and quickly make then those incremental changes. So good example of that from Anheuser-Busch is with Patagonia. Is we launched Patagonia, which is a beer from Argentina, and we brought it up to the U.S. and launched it in Colorado. And it's already on its third packaging, and it launched just under a year ago. And so what we did is we got it up here fast, and then we just started asking consumers, what do you think? What do you think? Like, what do you like about this packaging? Could it be better? Like, is it communicating the messages we want to communicate? Take that feedback, change it. And that's what we're trying to do is become faster. We're good at being big. We're not necessarily good at moving quickly. So we're trying to get better at moving quickly.
I'd imagine you guys probably do some pilots too with some different grocery stores or wherever stores.
Especially on the craft side, pilots are really great because what you can do is just small markets. So for Goose, we pilot a lot of things in Chicago, and we do it with like 4-pack 16 ounces. And so what we have is like a rotating package. So same UPC. So it's ready to go into any store. And then you just rotate what's actually going into the can. So it's a way to get feedback there. And then the other thing all craft brewers are really doing is utilizing their brew pub to have feedback right there on site. So you make small batch brews, sell them at the brew pub. You have your bartender right there who's able to speak to it and tell the consumer, hey, you know, here's what you're drinking. Here's the newest hazy IPA. Here's why we think you might like it. See what the consumers say. And then we can make tweaks and keep it in the brew pub and see what's going there. But a lot of times what we'll do is the fastest moving brands in the brew pub are what you'll then start to see come to the general market.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask as well, because we talked about the container itself, right? We talked about the glass bottles or the actual cans and modifying packaging, but then there's taste. And that's what you're saying is like, you actually are getting live feedback as they're drinking it.
And yeah, that's what's crazy, where the crafts have such an upside on the rest of the market because of that, is with those brew pubs, is you can have somebody in the brew pub and like, people would never know, right? Is you might have the head of marketing for Goose Island serving you a beer and asking you questions, and you have no idea. So you're giving him your honest feedback on it because you don't know that he actually did make this beer. So you're telling him, you know, honestly, dude, this one sucks. I think you got to change. And he loves it because he's like, okay, great. Like now I know what I need to fix. Now I know how to make it better.
Interesting. So I'd imagine you guys have, that's probably a whole separate conversation of, tweaking the actual ingredients, even in the different microbrews, right? In the different brews.
That's where the smarter people work on that side of the business who understand how that works. But yeah, that's it's amazing the science that goes into it. So I never thought of this when I first joined the company, but we have tons of biochemists and scientists who are working on the beer side who understand the slight tweaks of, you know, a different hop profile or a different malt and how that's going to change the taste. And so some of the smartest people in the industry working there trying to figure out how to make just the best tasting beers. But again, kind of way out of my wheelhouse. So I just enjoy working with them, telling them, hey, here's what we think the consumer wants. Can you make it? And then they always are able to just wow us with product that's even better than we'd asked them.
Oh, yeah. And how do you, like, if you're going to get feedback, and really it's kind of a, you said you have these kind of user group sessions, or you've got, you know, you're sitting behind the counter and serving the beer and you can give feedback. How do you make sure that, you know, if they get feedback like, oh, this sucks, how do you know that's not like an anomaly, like an outsider? Like you keep, is there a certain number of pieces of data points and feedback you need?
I think it starts actually before you even talk to the consumer, is looking at the broader industry and trying to understand trends. So if you start there, then you at least have an idea of where you want to go versus, you know, if I just go and
aimlessly
ask, hey, Max, what do you like to drink? Well, that's one guy.
Yes.
It's a little bit harder. And even if you have a focus group of 10, like, that's not that great. But if I go and look at Meijer sales data and understand that, okay, at Meijer, the fastest moving SKUs are lower calorie beers, or it's the seltzers or things like that, then I at least have a little bit more room to go. And then we look at, even outside of the beer industry, is like, what's working in non-alcohol? Is there an opportunity for us to learn from a very close industry for then us to start making those changes? And then it's just about the quantity of feedback you're getting. So, you know, if one person doesn't like it and thinks it's too hoppy, but nine other people are saying it's right on, then you're probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit of that feedback. And then I think you got to be honest with yourself too, is when someone tells me it's too hoppy, if I have another sip, I'm like, oh, you know what? They might be right.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the thing, is never fall in love with the brand or the beer, like fall in love with the idea.
Yeah.
Right. So we want to sell more Goose Island, but I'm happy to sell whatever the consumer wants. So I'm not married to any brand or any new beer. I'm just married to the idea of getting more Goose Island into consumers' hands.
Mm, that's good. Yeah. And I think it's very related to, don't get married to the solution, get married to solving the problem.
That, much better way to say it.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So that's a great innovation tip. So we're looking at, we have these moonshot ideas, right, that Anheuser is working on. Then we also have these small incremental changes. So both of them, do they ever converge? Do the two teams ever like talk to one another and share learnings? Because I'd imagine both of them have different learnings they could share with one another.
That's exactly it. Is the key, I think, to good innovation is communication. And it's not just communication with the innovation team. And I think this sometimes is where people may get lost, is you have all of your people designated as innovators talking to each other, and they're not going to the broader company or the broader like industry to get that knowledge. And I think what we're trying to get better at, and I think we do a pretty good job of, is involving more people.
Yeah.
And so if I can talk to frontline sales reps and gets their feedback on, hey, here's what's working on Stella, or here's what's working on Goose, or hey, on the Stella packaging, you know, some of it's starting to break. If there's anything you could do to just have a little bit more glue, like, that's awesome feedback that we need to know. So I think communication is really something that can help drive better innovation. Because the worst thing in the world is if we have a good idea in LA and a good idea in New Jersey, and it could be an amazing idea if the two came together, and instead we just have two good ideas that are kind of sitting alone. So we try to bring everything together and just make sure, as things are filtered through, that the best ideas are then shared and worked on together. Mm. So I think that hopefully kind of answers what you were asking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it sounds like, you know, Steve Blank says, get out of the building. That's what you guys are doing. We need to interview. You need to talk to more than just the innovation teams. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Is whenever I can, I like to get out in the market. You want to talk to retailers. You want to talk to consumers. Just pick their brains. And, hey, why are you picking up this beer versus that beer? Or, hey, what's moving better for you right now? What do you see, Mr. Retailer? And the same thing with your sales staff. Is those tend to be the people who have a lot of that knowledge that you don't get unless you go and ask
for it. Right. Is there any geographical, you know, ness that you've found to packaging or any other factors, or is it really just taste and preference on beer?
You know, packaging, there is a little bit in terms of what SKU size works for venues. Think baseball stadiums, is Dodger Stadium sells 25-ounce cans, Chicago sells 16-ounce cans. Mm. That matters a lot in terms of which single SKU you want to launch. But it's also, even at the off-premises, in some areas you have a higher six-pack or a higher single. In California, they over-index in single consumption versus multi-pack consumption. And then for the crafts, it's a similar thing as in certain markets. Like in Wisconsin, four-pack 16-ounce is big. Whereas in Illinois, you see a lot more six packs. So you are right, as there is a difference there in terms of what SKU you see being the biggest. And then the next question you have to ask yourself is, do I want to follow into the same SKU, or is there an opportunity to be a little bit different? And that comes back to trying to understand the consumer and understand the why. Is this an opportunity for me to kind of change the market?
You're the director over the Great Lakes region. Mm-hmm. So is that intentional, to where obviously every region is different? And so that's probably why a lot of the strategy of, they've kind of divided it into areas. Would that be accurate?
That's spot on, as we have seven different sales regions. And the hope is that each of those sales regions is unique and similar enough within the region to have just one team leading the strategy, but then different enough from some of the other regions that it doesn't make sense to have less regions.
Right.
And then the other nice piece there is I have six counterparts who I can bounce ideas off of, understand what's working, what's not working. And then I have to make the decision, is this working right in California because it's California, or is this something I can steal from Stephanie and then start using in my region?
Right. Makes a lot of sense. A lot of very interesting factors that go on and crafting a beer and packaging a beer, getting it to the destinations, the audience of who's going to drink the beer. Very interesting. For the listeners in the podcast, I think that the couple things that I can sum up are, one is incremental changes are innovation, can be innovation too, right? And focusing on, you don't need a big bang iPhone. Is that what I'm hearing? One of those?
Yeah, I would say incremental is still innovation. So those small changes. The other piece for me is adding value to the consumer is the big piece on innovation. Is I think sometimes when people are thinking, this is a really cool idea. And say, well, yeah, it's an interesting idea, but is it adding value, or is it just something that's interesting? And if it's not adding value, it's probably not going to be that successful.
Right. People are just going to ignore it, and they'll be like, oh, that's kind of strange or not
unique,
used.
Odd. Like, maybe I'll bring it up at a dinner party and we'll laugh about it, but I'm not going to buy it.
Right. Yep. And then I heard it also, get out of the building, right? Get where the users are. Ask them, talk to them. Yeah.
Communication is key. And I think that goes into a couple of different buckets. Is make sure you're communicating to your retailers, because you're going to need your retailers to sell your product. Make sure you're communicating to your consumers, because they're the ones who have to end up buying the product. And then also make sure you're talking to your frontline staff, because they're going to be the ones pushing it. And you need to make sure that they understand, one, what they're pushing, and then two, that you understand what they'd be able to push better. So the communication loop should really go both ways. Is I need to make sure they understand why we're launching the innovations we are. But I also, before I even do that, I need to understand if they think those innovations will work and that they'll be willing to get behind it.
Right. And the last thing I could think of that we talked about too is not being married to the solution, but to the problem.
That's exactly
solving the problem.
Solving the problem. And again, trying to add more value. If you're if you're looking at something, you think it's going to add value, you talk to the consumers like, you know what? I don't really think that's going to do it for me. Move on and find something else that's going to make their lives a little bit better.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Max. It's been a pleasure.
This was fun. I had a great time. Thank
you
for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to Ask an Innovator. Visit us on our website, www.askaninnovator.com. This podcast has been sponsored by City Innovation Labs.